And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West, the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's January 4th, fourth day of the year. Only 361 days remain till the year's over with. On this day in 46 B.C., Julius Caesar fights Titus Labienus in the Battle of Respina. 871, the Battle of Reading. Ethelred of Wessex and his brother Alfred are defeated by a Danish invasion army. Those Danes, something else. 1649, in the English Civil War, the Rump Parliament votes to put Charles I on trial. He apparently was that era's Donald Trump. They hated him. 1717, the Netherlands, Great Britain, and France signed a Triple Alliance. In an attempt to maintain the Treaty of Utrecht, Britain having signed a preliminary alliance with France on November 28th. 1762, Great Britain declares war on Spain, which meant Spain got involved in the Seven Years' War. 1798, Constantine Hengirli arrives in Bucharest, Wallachia, as this new prince. He'd been appointed by the Ottoman Empire, and the Ottomans in those days, they had the power. 1853, after having been kidnapped and sold into slavery in the American South, Solomon Northrop regained his freedom. He wrote the book 12 Years a Slave, which later became a national bestseller. 1854, the McDonald Islands are discovered by Captain William McDonald aboard the Samarang. 1863, the New Apostolic Church, a Christian and Chiliastic Church, is established in Hamburg, Germany. 1878, Russo-Turkish War. Sofia is liberated from Ottoman rule and designated the capital of liberated Bulgaria. 1884, the Fabian Society is founded in London. Now, for those who are not familiar with the Fabian Society, it's a British social organization whose purpose is to advance the principles of democratic socialism via gradualist and reformist effort in democracies rather than revolutionary overthrow. It was historically related to radicalism, a left-wing liberal tradition, which we're seeing a lot of these days here with the Democratic Party. It's taken a hard turn to the left. 1885, the Sino-French War. French troops under General Oscar de Negrier defeated America's superior King Force in Nui Bop in northern Vietnam. 1896, Utah was admitted as the 45th U.S. state. In 1903, Topsy, an elephant, was electrocuted by the owners of Luna Park in Coney Island. Edison Film Company recorded the electrocution. It was called Electrocuting an Elephant, which ought to have seen people go to trial for that. They did it just to see if they could do it. 1912, the Scout Association is incorporated throughout the British Empire by Royal Society, by Royal Charter, rather. It's the largest scouting organization in the UK, and it's the World Organization of the Scout Movement's recognized member for the UK. Following the origin of scouting in 1907, the association was formed in 1910 and incorporated in 1912 under its previous name, the Boy Scouts Association. In 1918, the Finnish Declaration of Independence is recognized by Russia, Sweden, Germany, and France. 1944, World War II, Operation Carpetbagger. It involves the dropping of arms supplies to resistance fighters in Europe. And it began on this date in 44. Armed a lot of German units as well. 1948, Burma gained its independence from the UK, becoming an independent republic named the Union of Burma, with Sao Sui Taik as its first president and U Nu as its first prime minister. 1951, Korean War. Chinese and North Korean forces capture Seoul for the second time. 1956, the Greek National Radical Union is formed by Konstantinos Karamanlis. 1958, Sputnik 1, the first artificial Earth satellite, is launched by the Soviet Union in 57. It fell to Earth from orbit on this day in 58. 1959, Lunar 1 becomes the first spacecraft to reach the vicinity of the moon. Now, Lunar 1, also known as Achita, E1 or number 4, it was part of the Soviet Luna program. It was launched in 1959. In 1972, Rose Helbrun becomes the first female judge to sit at the Old Bailey in London. 1975, this date overflowed the 12-bit field that had been used in the DEC System 10 operating systems. There were numerous crashes and problems related to this bug while an alternative format was developed. 1976, the Troubles. The Ulster Volunteer Force shoots dead 6 Irish Catholic civilians in County Armagh, Northern Ireland. Next day, gunmen would shoot dead 10 Protestant civilians in retaliation. 1987, the Maryland train collision. An Amtrak train en route to Boston from Washington collides with Conrail engines in Chase, Maryland. 16 people are killed. 1989, second Gulf of Sidra incident. A pair of Libyan MiG-23 floggers are shot down by a pair of U.S. Navy F-14 Tomcats during an air-to-air confrontation. 1990, Pakistan's deadliest train accident over a loaded passenger train collides with an empty freight train. 307 die and 700 are injured. 1998, a massive ice storm hits eastern Canada and the northeast U.S., continuing through January 10th and causing widespread destruction. 1999, former professional wrestler Jesse Ventura is sworn in on this date as governor of Minnesota. I've interviewed him a number of times on this show. Nice guy. In 2000, a Norwegian passenger train departs from Trondheim and collides with a local train coming from Hamar and Astra Amat. 19 are killed and 68 are injured. 2004, Spirit, a NASA Mars rover, lands successfully on Mars at 4:35 UTC. That's 4 in the morning, folks. 2004, Mikhail Saakashvili is elected president of Georgia following a November 2003 Rose Revolution. In 2006, Ehud Olmert becomes acting Prime Minister of Israel after the incumbent Ariel Sharon suffers a second, apparently more serious, stroke. 2007, 110th U.S. Congress convenes, electing Nancy Pelosi as the first female Speaker of the House in U.S. history. She's been in that job off and on for 13 years. No, I'm sorry, 15 years. 2008, an LET L410 turbojet crashes in the Los Arrogas Archipelago in Venezuela. 14 are killed. 2010, the Burj Khalifa, the current tallest building in the world, officially opens up in Dubai. 2013, a gunman kills 8 people in a house-to-house rampage in Cavite, Philippines. 2018, Hinnenmann Kronstadt train crash, a passenger train operated by Chassel Sermel, collides with a truck on a level crossing at Geneva Station between Hinnenmann and Kronstadt in Free State, South Africa. 20 are killed and 260 are injured. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day, Angela of Foligno, Elizabeth Ann Seton, Pharaoh of Uzes, Mavalus, Pharaohdis of Ghent, Rigobert, the 11th of the 12 days of Christmas in Western Christianity, Independence Day in Myanmar, celebrates Independence Myanmar from the UK in 1948, Colonial Martyrs Repression Day in Angola, Day of the Martyrs in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ogoni Day in Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People, Tokyo Dome Show, it's the annual Wrestle Kingdom event run by New Japan Pro Wrestling. And it's World Braille Day. Let's see what else we might have. 1947, Samuel Colt sells his first revolver pistol to the U.S. government. That's 1847. Colonel Colt made all men equal, was the saying. 1865, on this date, New York Stock Exchange opens its first permanent headquarters at 10 to 12 Broadway Street near Wall Street, New York City. 1961, the longest recorded strike ends as a Danish barber's assistants in a 33-year strike. 2021, the first Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine given to the general public goes to 82-year-old Brian Pinker in the UK. And this day in 1984 saw the beginning of Night Court starring Harry Anderson. Okay, let's see what else we got. I know there are other January 4th, 1965, in his State of Union Address, President Lyndon M. King Johnson lays out for Congress a laundry list of legislation that he's going to achieve to create the Great Society. Now I know that there are quite a number of things that happened on this date. Don't you hate it when something that you've had in front of you just goes away? This is National Trivia Day. National Spaghetti Day. Okay, World Hypnotism Day. It's Veganuary Month, National Hobby Month, National Clean Up Your Computer Month, Get Organized Month, International Creativity Month, International Brain Teaser Month, National Be Kind to Food Servers Month, National Oatmeal Month, National Hot Tea Month. Everything's got a month. Okay. You know, I've had 15 calls this morning wanting me to sign up with these various companies for their Medicare. Thing is, Medicare is only available from the government. Okay. Well, it is a da, 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 da. That's not it. Okay. In 2001, Vanilla Ice was arrested and spent a night in jail after fighting with his wife. That led to him pulling her hair out. In 1989, on this date, George H.W. Bush declared himself president. A 7.1 magnitude earthquake in Tonghai, China, in 1970 claimed over 10,000 lives. 1962, New York City modernized its subway by starting its first unmanned trains. Ooh-hoo-hoo-doo-dee-doo. I talked about the electrocution of Topsy the elephant. That was actually a publicity stunt. People paid to watch it. In 1884, Canada had its last sighting of the eastern cougar. I mentioned the fact this is National Trivia Day and National Spaghetti Day. You know, originally the Roman calendar only had 10 months. It excluded January and February, which might not be a bad idea. Okay, in 274, Saint Eutychian begins his reign as Catholic Pope. 1490, Anna of Brittany announces all those who now allow the King of France to be considered guilty of the crime of lèse majesté. 1570, Spanish Viceroy Alva banishes Zutphen City's only physician, Jew Schweitzer. And his reasons for banishing him? Because he's a Jew. That's so stupid. 1698, most of the Palace of Whitehall in London, the main residence of the English monarchs, is destroyed by fire. 1754, Columbia University is founded as King's College in New York City. 1847, manuscripts of Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights and Ad Bronte's Agnes Gray are sent to publisher T.C. Newby. They were published in December of 1947. 1861, Fort Morgan in Mobile, Alabama, seized by the state. It was a Union garrison. 1863, four-wheeled roller skates patented by James Plimpton of New York. 1885, Dr. William Brand of Iowa performs the very first appendectomy in America on a 22-year-old by the name of Mary Gartside. 1887, Thomas Stevens, first man to bicycle around the world, San Francisco to San Francisco. 1893, President Cleveland grants amnesty to Mormon polygamists. 1902, the French Panama Canal Company offers to sell its rights to build a canal to the U.S. for $40 million, which tipped the balance away from those who wanted to do a canal through Nicaragua. 1904, in Gonzalez versus Williams, U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Puerto Ricans are not aliens and they can't be refused admission into the continental U.S. Now, they didn't get citizenship until 1917, but that's neither here nor there. 1915, Transcaucasus Russians defeat Turkish troops. 1932, the state of siege is proclaimed in Honduras. And finally, 1935, Bob Hope was first heard on network radio as part of something called the Intimate Review. And on that note, we have pretty much finished our little history segment. We've been talking about haunted hotels, and there's a good many stories of haunted hotels. Outside of Las Cruces, New Mexico, is a place called Dripping Springs. And that's an area that's long been enveloped in mystery. Now, Colonel Eugene Van Patten originally built the Dripping Springs Resort in the 1870s. He came to Mesilla, New Mexico, at the invitation of his uncle, John Butterfield, who operated the Butterfield stage line. Van Patten worked at the Picacho stage station and probably others until the stage line ceased operations in Las Cruces in 1861. During the Civil War, he signed up with the Confederacy and saw action at the Battle of Glorieta Pass near Santa Fe. Now, when he built the Dripping Springs Resort, it was originally called Van Patten's Mountain Camp. It had 16 rooms, a dining room, and a concert hall. Very popular around the turn of the century, and a lot of famous people, including Pat Garrett and Pancho Villa, stayed there. Van Patten had married a local Piro Indian woman, and a number of the Indians lived and worked at the resort. And they hand-carried water from the spring to the rooms and olas attached to long wooden poles, and from time to time held dances for the amusement of the guests. Late 1800s, a stage line brought guests to the hotel from Las Cruces, which is about 17 miles away. They delivered the guests to the front of the hotel and returned to the livery station. The wagons and horses for the stage line, as well as the personal livestock of the guests, are kept in this area. Of course, in the 1900s, the more affluent began to arrive by automobiles, while a lot still came by horse and wagon. Now, of course, the resort still had its share of exciting times. When Albert Fountain, a prominent figure in the Lincoln County War, was murdered on the east side of the Oregon Mountains in 1896, his daughter was notified of the murder at the resort. And Van Patten led a large posse to investigate, but the Fountain's body and that of his 12-year-old son Henry were never found. He was coming back from Santa Fe, I think it was, with his 12-year-old son. They were in a buckboard, and the buckboard, the horses, and Fountain and his son vanished. 1917, Van Patten went bankrupt and Dripping Springs was sold to Dr. Nathan Boyd. He homesteaded on a parcel of land adjacent to the resort. Boyd was a physician in San Francisco who later married the daughter of a wealthy Australian engineer. He joined his in-law's business, became involved in large engineering projects all over the world. And then he and his wife came to Las Cruces to promote, design, and build a dam on the Rio Grande, whose floods often devastated the countryside. Local farmers whose lands would have been inundated by the lake that would rise up behind the dam stopped its building. Ironically, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation created the state's largest man-made lake, Elephant Butte Reservoir, and they evidently built a dam further north. Well, by the time Boyd acquired Van Patten's resort, his wife had contracted tuberculosis and decided to remain in Las Cruces. Boyd converted Dripping Springs into a sanitarium. New structures were built in different parts of the canyon to provide housing and care for the patients. Then the Boyd family eventually sold the property to another physician, Dr. Sexton, out of Las Cruces, who continued to operate it as a tuberculosis sanatorium. Late as 1946, the resort was still in relatively good shape, and a group of local citizens attempted to raise $4,000 to buy it for historical preservation. Unfortunately, that effort failed, and unknown persons scavenged the resort for building materials. Today, the ruins of Dripping Springs Resort lie scattered around the canyons, preserving the memory of Colonel Van Patten, the doctors Boyd and Sexton, and a lot of famous and not so famous who visited there. Now, if you go, you'll find the complex that was once known as Boyd Sanatorium sits silently, brooding over the deserted canyons, mostly hidden from view behind clusters of rocky outcrops and pockets of thick, thorny desert fauna. These buildings were once all part of a tuberculosis sanatorium built around 1910 by Dr. Boyd. Legend says he had a beloved wife who suffered from this disease, and he built that place for her. Now, there are other darker rumors about Boyd Sanatorium as well. Rumors of a more, shall we say, unknown element. Some say this canyon is filled with restless spirits, and some happen to be the spirits of the patients who passed away up at the mountainside sanatorium. The deserted building known as the caretaker's house had a wooden porch with a breathtaking view of the valley. It's not hard to imagine there might be spirits there. The trail leading up to this place is officially closed every day well before dark, earlier, in fact, than all the other trails in the area. And there have been a number of reports of campers in nearby canyon campgrounds being terrified by visions and horrific nightmares featuring torturous treatments undergone by gaunt and ghostly patients. And this in spite of the fact that some of the campers are said to have no prior knowledge of the nearby sanatorium's presence. There have also been various paranormal investigations at this location. One group even claims to have gotten photos of shadowy figures in the ruins. In fact, it was here at Boyd Sanatorium where a number of new cameras failed to work. Now, in each case, the camera worked fine at the Van Patten ruins and began to work again as soon as the would-be photographer went a little ways down the trail from the sanatorium. It just wouldn't work while in the confines of the sanatorium itself. A hand-hewn stone stairway leads up the mountainside to where the patient's housing used to stand. All that remains of these buildings now are the foundations and low stone walls that outline the shapes of where they once existed. And on this pathway can be found the remains of an old drinking fountain designed to aid those who took this way up the canyon. Water piped in from the springs nearby to a holding tank above the terraces where the patient's housing stood. Piping carried the water down to the residences and a drinking fountain. The kitchen and dining hall was located in a separate structure, perched high atop stilt-like beams along the mountainside. Well, in the early 1900s, Dr. Boyd got involved in a court case that would eventually deplete his funds. So that's when he sold the facility to Dr. T.C. Sexton from Las Cruces. Over the next few years, it was intermittently run as a sanatorium and as a resort. Nathan Boyd's son, Earl, bought the place back in the early 1930s and moved on to the land. He lived in the caretaker's house. In 1940, while Earl Boyd was away serving in the military, the structures were subjected to heavy damaging, vandalism, and looting by unknown parties. Since his return, that place had been vacant. Despite changing hands one more time before being acquired by the Bureau of Land Management in 1988, in spite of the federal government's ownership, there are still shadowy figures seen moving about as evening falls. Locals still say, don't be caught around the sanatorium after dark. You never know what's going to happen. Then in Montezuma, New Mexico, we have Montezuma's Castle, originally known as the Montezuma Hotel. It was designed by noted Chicago architects John Root and Daniel Burham for the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. They built a spur from nearby Las Vegas, New Mexico, to Montezuma in 1882. And for over 10 years, the resort was a major attraction, and visitors included Rutherford B. Hayes, Ulysses S. Grant, William Tecumseh Sherman, Theodore Roosevelt, and a large laundry list of others before the Montezuma closed as a hotel in 1903. The castle was later owned by the Baptist Church and served as the site of its Montezuma College, and then by the Catholic Church, which ran a seminary for Mexican priests from 1937 to 1972. In 1972, the Catholic Church closed the seminary, and the castle was left empty and became easy prey for a decade of vandalism. In 1981, the Herman Hammer Foundation bought the property in order to found the United States campus of a United World College. Castle remained an empty but picturesque backdrop to the campus until 1997, when it garnered national attention. First, the National Trust for Historic Preservation recognized the building as one of America's most endangered historic places. And in 1998, the White House Millennium Council named it one of America's treasures, the first property west of the Mississippi to get that honor. 1998, United World College of the USA launched its first capital campaign. It's called Save the Castle, Serve the World. Raise funds for scholarship endowments, program development, campus improvements, and restoration of the castle. 2000, the building underwent a $20.5 million renovation, transforming it into an international center with student and faculty housing, dining facilities, offices, a campus store, and student social center. Also located in the castle is the Bartos Institute for the construction engagement of conflict. Now, while many of the building's interior and exterior details are restored, modern treasures are added, including 2 8-foot glass sculptures designed specifically for the castle's enormous dining room by artist Dale Chihuly. Large number of people have reported seeing the figure of a woman in one of the towers at night. She just sits and seems to be watching for someone. Others report hearing strange sounds coming from some of the empty rooms inside the massive structure. And there have been voices heard when there's been no one around to account for them. There's still a lot about the castle that remains a mystery. Then in Gallup, New Mexico, we have the El Rancho Hotel. Formerly opened December 17, 1937. The El Rancho Hotel is built by the brother of the movie magnate D.W. Griffin. Drawn by the many films made in that area, Ronald Reagan, Spencer Tracy, Katherine Hepburn, Kirk Douglas were among the many stars listed in the guest register. Autographed photos of the stars, Navajo rugs, and mounted trophy animal heads adorn the two-story open lobby with its circular staircase. Well, the El Rancho Hotel is actually built by Joe Massaglia in 1937. And as I said, it was done for Griff Griffin, brother of D.W. Griffin. Originally, Griffin came to Gallup to direct a film, later returned to build the El Rancho Hotel. He also managed the local chief theater. From 1930s to 50s, the hotel became a temporary home for many Hollywood stars. It also became a stopping point for tourists driving all Route 66. The hotel is now protected by the National Historic Preservation Society. And it's continually cared for by Mr. Ortega, who's made it his personal hobby since it was purchased. Now, the hotel's decorated and furnished in the Old West rustic style, built of original brick, ash tar, stone, and huge wooden beams with pitched wood shale roof. Large portico overlooks the entrance and reflects the southern plantation style. Entering through the solid wood doors, you get a chance to view the grandeur of the lobby. Floor is brick inlaid in a basket weave pattern. Its light fixtures are made of stamped aluminum. Stone fireplace cove is surrounded by a handmade wooden staircase that spirals to the second floor balcony. And the balcony encircles the lobby and displays original photos of the hotel and many autographed pictures of Hollywood stars. A large number of Hollywood's most famous movies were shot in that area, such as The Bad Man, an MGM film starring Wyatt Berry and Ronald Reagan in 1940. Sundown, a Wanger film starring Gene Tierney in 1941. Desert Song, starring Dennis Morgan in 1942. Song of the Nile, starring Maria Montez and John Hall in 44. Four Faces West and Colorado Territory, both starring Joel McRae in 47 and 48. Streets of Laredo, starring William Holden and William Bendix in 1948. Rocky Mountain, starring Errol Flynn in 1950. Big Carnival, starring Kirk Douglas in the 50. Raton Pass, starring Dennis Morgan in 1951. The movie New Mexico, starring Lou Ayres in 1950. Fort Defiance, starring Dana Clark in 1950. Fort Massacre, starring Joel McRae in 57. Distant Trumpet, starring Troy Donahue and Suzanne Poissett in 63, and The Hallelujah Trail, starring Burt Lancaster and Lee Remick in 1964. But it's not just films that attract people's attention. A large number of guests and a number of staff members have reported hearing disembodied footsteps and laughter on the upper floor of the lobby after hours. Objects have been reported to have been moved around throughout various locations of the hotel by unseen hands. And in the bridal suite, the doors open and close by themselves. A number of stars spent their honeymoons there. No telling which one it is. Also in Grants, we have the Econo Lodge. It's an older three-story hotel. No one seems to be completely certain of how it happened, but this hotel has gained a certain reputation for being a haunted place to stay. Now, even though there are three floors to the facility, no one is allowed to go onto the third floor. All the rooms on that level are now used for storage. And even though nobody's allowed to be on that floor from the swimming pool, a lot of folks have seen folks looking down at it from the third floor windows. A number of guests reported hearing footsteps, the sound of screams, and distinctive sound of elevators going up to that level. These same people have also said when they inquire, it's revealed the elevators don't go to the third floor. It takes a key for the elevator to get past the second floor. But quite often, the elevators of their own accord go to the third floor. Now, former staff members have reported they've heard many stories about an unknown person appearing in the kitchen out of nowhere. Whenever this figure mysteriously appears in the kitchen, the entire room becomes as cold as an icebox. You can see your breath. Other people have said all the stories about the hotel being haunted are fake, and it started as a joke. Some have tried to confirm the incidents that have led to the hauntings, but can't find newspaper stories about the deaths. When asked, some of the local folks admit that the town covered up the murders in order not to scare away tourists. Now, according to the story told by those who believe the hotel is haunted, it was a rather attractive young lady who worked as a hotel maid. She had been called to bring some towels to a guest staying on the third floor, and when she arrived, he pulled her into her room, raped and murdered her. Now, some of the staff say they've actually gotten to the third floor trying to investigate the story, and they claim that the yellow police barrier tape is still in place on the left wing of the third floor. These same staff members also say that if you actually get to the room and go into it, it's possible to still smell the blood, and they're all adamant that the room is very, very cold, even the hottest of summers. According to the locals, the third floor was closed off because other guests were reported that at night they could hear screams of terror coming from that room and the sounds of a struggle. There are also some reports that this was not the only murder to take place on the third floor of the Econo Lodge. Some people say the hotel is filled with the evil that tends to cause the violence. And there are a number of stories if you stay on the second floor in the room directly beneath the murder room that during the night you hear screams and cries for help coming from the room up above. Nobody's reported what happens if you respond to those requests for assistance. Well, in Rosciata, New Mexico, there's Pendari's Restaurant and Lodge in Pendari's Village. Now, it's a subdivision located in Rosciata, New Mexico, about 30 miles northwest of Las Vegas, New Mexico. The main attractions are an 18-hole mountain golf course, fishing, hiking, and just plain old relaxation. The subdivision originally had 980 lots laid out. Of the original lots, approximately 100 are on the market for resale purposes. Now, Rosciata Valley and the surrounding communities hold a very fascinating history, and several buildings built in the 1870s can still be seen today. Now, the lodge has 18 rooms that have been freshly painted and have new carpeting. Rollaway beds for families are available, and there are additional accommodations available in summer homes. There's a full-service restaurant that serves dinner daily. Breakfast and lunch can be enjoyed at the clubhouse near the golf shop. You can have a drink in the historic Moosehead Saloon. The conference center seats 80 for meetings and is also available for banquets. The restaurant, which seats 100, provides opportunity for banquets for Roger groups. Now, Pendari's Village was established in the mid-60s, and this little subdivision has grown into a unique opportunity for outdoor enthusiasts to live and or vacation. It's just 2 hours out of Albuquerque. It's the perfect weekend getaway. Now, most of the employees talk about seeing an older man in a downstairs bar. Nobody knows who he is, but he'll suddenly be seen standing by the bar as if waiting for a drink, and then if you look away and look back, he's gone. He's also been seen standing outside one of the rooms in the lodge as if waiting for somebody. Nobody has any idea who he is. Then in Philmont, New Mexico, we have Philmont Scout Camp. It's the oldest high-adventure base operated by the Boy Scouts of America. Along with the Florida High Adventure Sea Bass Base and a collection of programs in the Boundary Waters, it's one of the most renowned Boy Scouts of America facilities. Now, Philmont's located in the Sangre de Cristo Range of the Rocky Mountains in New Mexico. The closest town is Cimarron, New Mexico, but you might better designates us by saying it's about 20 miles west-northwest of Springer, New Mexico, or 35 miles southwest of Raton, New Mexico. It's shaped a little bit like the letter I with the bottom section larger than the top. It's about 12 miles across east to west at its widest point and about 30 miles long. There are no mountains to the south of Philmont or to the east, but the interior is quite mountainous. The lowest elevation is 6,500 feet at the southeast corner. The highest point is the peak of Baldy Mountain at 12,441 feet on the northwest boundary. The most recognizable landmark at Philmont is the Tooth of Time, a granite monolith protruding 500 feet from an east-west ridge. It's actually, though, 9,003 feet high. The Tooth of Time Ridge and the latitude line it sits on marks the boundary between the central and southern sections of Philmont. Native Americans of the Hickory Apache tribe and the Ute tribe once inhabited Philmont. One Native American archaeological site exists in the northern section, and various camps seek to preserve Philmont's Native American heritage. Mid-19th century, Santa Fe Trail crossed the plains just southwest of Philmont. Tooth of Time owes its name to this particular trail. Travelers knew that once they passed it, they only had a few weeks to go until they reached Santa Fe. Philmont's strategic location along the trail spurred some interest in it. 1841, Carlos Bobien and Guadalupe Miranda obtained a large land grant from the Mexican government, including the present ranch. Soon the grant fell into the hands of Bobien's son-in-law, Lucien Maxwell, who played an important part in developing and settling it. He sold the lands to the Maxwell Land Grant and Railroad Company, which gave up and handed it on to the Dutch Development Company, who decided to parcel it out to ranchers. Now, an old Mexican homestead is preserved on the ranch as part of the Abreu camp for many years until it burned down. It was enjoyed by many. Now there's only a stone fireplace and a chimney. Reconstructed homestead can be seen less than a mile away at the new Abreu camp. Herds of cattle, another relic of this era, grazing the meadows of southeastern Philmont. History of mining at Philmont dates back to the years immediately after the Civil War. Story is that an Indian befriended a Union soldier and happened to give him a shiny rock. Now, a little hard to believe that, since any Union troops stationed in New Mexico at that time would have been involved in driving out the Native Americans, but it's a good story. That shiny material in the rock was found to be copper. Now, according to the story, the soldier and two of his friends went to investigate and actually found gold. But they couldn't stay and mine it, and by the time they returned the next year, they were overrun by miners. Scores of gold mines were excavated in Philmont and opened up in the early 20th century. Now, underneath Baldy Mountain to this day is said to be a large vein of gold, but extracting it hadn't really been feasible. The Contention Mine, located at Cypher's Mine Camp, is open for guided tours. It's a played-out mine. They now mine the purses of those that come to see it. The penultimate owner of Philmont was wealthy oil magnate and wilderness enthusiast Wade Phillips, who amassed a large part of the old land grant in the 1920s. He built a large residence at Philmont and called it the Villa Philmonte. Also constructed a number of hunting lodges and day-use camps. Wouldn't have been beyond his means to bring electricity to these camps, but he decided not to. Wanted to keep it natural, so to speak. Some of these camps have been preserved, complete with wood-burning stoves, oil lamps, and other design features indicative of Phillips' often eccentric taste. The Phillips used the ranch as a private game preserve, but would sometimes allow others to use it, including a few Boy Scouts. He was so impressed with the Scouts that in 1938 he donated a part of it to the Boy Scouts of America. Initially, they named it the Fulton Rocky Mountain Scout Camp. The word Fulton comes from Phillips' name, together with the good turn he did by donating the property. 1941, Phillips added the rest to the present Philmont property, including the Villa Philmonte. To help fund the upkeep of Philmont, he threw in a large office building in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And at this point in time, the ranch's name was also changed. Philmont was run differently in the early years than it is now. Half a dozen base camps were constructed at strategic locations. A visiting group of scouts would stay at one of these camps for a week and day hike to surrounding locations of interest. Conventional stationary camps are usually operated in this manner as well. Scouts wanted to visit a different area, they'd pack up their gear, hoist it onto donkeys, and hike to another base camp. Of course, eventually, probably due to the advent of modern and lightweight metal frame backpacks and other backpacking technology, the program was restructured to be backpacking base. Now, most of those who come to Philmont come for the trek, an 11-day backpacking trip. Other programs include cavalcades. They're similar to standard treks, but conducted on horseback. Rodeo treks are twice as long as standard treks and considerably more strenuous. Rodeo crews are put together by Philmont staff and consist of people from different parts of the country. Philmont Training Center offers week-long training programs for adult leaders and a variety of outdoor programs for trainees' families. The Roving Outdoor Conservation School and various trail crew programs teach participants about ecology, conservation techniques, and trail construction methods. There are also guided activities such as fishing and winter camping and skiing. Now, the area known as Base Camp is actually a town unto itself. It's got a post office, half a dozen chapels, two dining halls, a clinic, a store for souvenirs and sundry camping gear, housing, which is mainly tents for about 900 staff, and tents for between 800 and 1,000 trekkers. Now, at this point, let's turn our attention to things that are whispered about after the lights go out. You see, the Philmont Scout Camp is haunted. Now, one of the ghosts that's been seen, in addition to the spirit of the shaman that haunts Eureka Mesa, has been that of Thomas Blackjack Ketchum, the only person ever hung in Clayton, New Mexico. He's also the only man ever hung for train robbery in the entire state, a law that was later found to be unconstitutional. But unfortunately, this decision was a little bit too late for Blackjack. There's a story told by a former scout about his meeting with Blackjack Ketchum while camping on the Philmont Scout Camp. He and some other scouts were backpacking through the mountains, visiting various historic sites, including an abandoned gold mine, a ghost town, and one of Blackjack Ketchum's outlaw hideouts. Now, the outlaw hideout was a large rock overhang, and the scouts thought it'd be fun to camp there for the night. But their scout leader insisted they stay at a nearby designated site. Disappointed at being refused the opportunity for what they thought would be an exciting time, several of the scouts set their tents up several hundred feet away from the leader's tent. They wanted to be able to sneak back to the hideout later that night. About 11, when the rest of the count was asleep, five of the scouts got their sleeping bags and went back to the Ketchum's hideout, set up camp inside the overhang, built a fire, and they sat around talking about their trip. Well, the fire burned down to nothing more than red coals, and the scouts settled down from their sleeping bags. And the individual that was telling the story drifted off to sleep. Suddenly, he was awakened by a noise in the bushes. Said he felt paralyzed, and able to move and try to call out to the others, but he couldn't make a sound. Then he saw a cowboy dressed all in black come running out of the bushes toward the hideout. Said the man was mostly solemn, but some parts of him appeared to be translucent. Said the man was filthy, dirty, with a tattered hat, clothes from the 1800s, terribly yellowed teeth. His face was red, glistening with sweat, with lots of facial hair, and held a revolver. Well, the cowboy apparently was unaware of the scouts, but the boy was still scared as much by his inability to move as by the man. And as he watched, a strange fog came from the tree line across from a small stream, and he could hear men yelling in the distance, and then he heard muffled gunfire. Well, the cowboy stopped and fired his revolver six times into the trees, and then he ran and stood right over the scout. He said the cowboy was wounded in the shoulder, and as he reloaded his pistol, he discharged six shell casings from the revolver, fell right on top of the boy. As the scout watched in amazement, the casings disappeared as they fell onto his sleeping bag. Cowboy finished reloading his revolver and fired some additional shots into the trees, and at that point, he seemed to become aware of the scout. The expression on the cowboy's face indicated that the scout had just appeared in front of him. He seemed to be confused and confounded, while the scout was just terrified. Then the cowboy uncocked and lowered his pistol, looked at the scout, and said, "You're not supposed to be here," and then he vanished. Well, eventually, the scout was able to go back to sleep, but he had to be shaken repeatedly by his fellow campers the next morning to wake him up. When they broke camp, he told his fellow campers about the dream, and they were amused. But as he rolled up his sleeping bag, he found six shell casings in the dust. Later, when they got back to the base camp, the scout visited an old saloon where a photograph of Blackjack Ketchum was displayed. And that was the same man he had seen at the hideout. Well, when he told his friends, they brushed it off. They thought he was setting him up for a hoax, and he never told anybody about it again, but he kept the shell casings. After he got home, he checked with a gun expert who said the casings were dated from sometime around 1878, when almost brand new condition and the gunpowder could still be smelled. In fact, the gunpowder was one that was used in the last century. It's not used today. He kept the shell casings for years, but unfortunately, after he moved away from home, his mother threw them out along with a number of other items the boy saved, such as comic books and baseball cards. Well, it's interesting. Apparently, just for a moment, Blackjack saw the scout, and the scout saw Blackjack. It seems that at certain periods of time, the wall between what was and what is gets very thin. Then we have New Mexico Military Institute in Roswell, New Mexico. Established in 1891, became a territorial school or a state school in 1893. Purpose then and now is for the education and training of the youth of this country with a mandate by law to be of as high a standard as like institutions in other states and territories of the U.S. The Institute itself is primarily an academic institution operating within the framework of a military environment, in spite of the fact that it's a school that prides itself on looking to the future. It still has to deal with some leftovers from the past. It does not use the phonetic alphabet J for Juliet for one of its troops because it believes that it's cursed. Back in the 1800s, when the school was still an all-male military school in the frontier, Juliet troop was one of the troops to go out and defend the school from Indians and other Wild West characters. After one such engagement, not a single member of the Juliet troop survived. Former students reported a tower with a clock was built in their honor, and the letter J has not been used as a unit designation since that time. But to add another interesting dimension to this school, it said that on some days when the sun is just right, if you look up at the tower, you see faces in the rock of the boys that lost their lives defending their school looking down at you. And there have been stories about shadowy figures being seen moving across the parade grounds in the early hours of the morning. And there have been stories told by former students about strange sounds and voices being heard in empty rooms. Certainly, when you're dealing with the paranormal, anything is possible. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. We'll be back tomorrow and talk more about haunted hotels. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.